Welcome to the ATL Podcast Network.
Hi, everybody. This is Ellen.
I'm Anissa.
My name's Anissa.
And I'm Ellen.
Hey, everybody. It's Ellen.
And Anissa.
This is Anissa and Ellen Raw. And this is Raw.
It's Raw, baby.
We're coming to you from Atlanta, and we're so excited.
We are so excited. Our vision for the Raw movement is... more than anything, we really want to allow other women to tell their story. So we will be interviewing women from all walks of life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some will be in the fitness world and some won't. Well, and just being able to share their stories in the hopes that hearing how their journey towards authenticity, mm-hmm. in whatever that means for them, inspires and gives space and permission for the rest of us,
right.
to own that part of ourselves.
Right.
I'm Anissa.
And I'm Ellen.
And this is Raw.
Hi, everybody.
Hello. How was your day, Ellen?
Well, it's fine. It's pouring rain outside.
No shit.
Pouring rain, mm-hmm. outside here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And...
which, you know what, would have let me get away with my little problem because nobody would have noticed that I peed myself a little bit getting out of my car. I had to pee really bad. I'm waiting. And I've had five kids.
I thought it was just that whole midlife thing.
It could be that too. And I got out of the car and I'm like, oh, I think I just peed myself a little. So I had to get back in my car and strip down and put on my workout clothes from this morning. So yeah, I had a little tingle.
Listen, when I first moved to Atlanta, I used to work not even... maybe a mile away from the office, but I could not leave the office any earlier than like 5:15 to get to the gym. And so I would change my clothes on 285 as I was driving to the gym. Like one leg.
That's a little acrobatic.
Yeah. And then it's like bumper to bumper. And like, mm-hmm. when you get those big tractor trailers looking down, you're like, hey,
don't mind me.
Now, of course I didn't change, you know, sports bra came on in the parking lot, but mm-hmm. you know what I'm talking about? Socks, mm-hmm. shoes. Oh, yeah, it was terrible.
Yep.
That's where I got my road rage from, I think.
There you go. Yep, so I peed myself. Now everybody knows.
Other than that, how are you?
You know, I had kind of a two left feet day, but I'm good.
Yeah, you did.
I did, but that's all right. It just happens sometimes. Some things are off, and you just got to flow with it.
But are you okay now?
I'm always good when I am here with you.
Oh, my gosh. All we love each other.
We do. My husband said, so what? I was saying yesterday, I'm like, I haven't talked to Ellen and... so I'm wondering if she's
five
like,
minutes.
Okay. And he goes, what, do you have to talk to her every day? And I went, well, yes. And he says, what, are you like dating now? And I was like, well, I kind of wish, but no, we're not. No, it's not like that.
It's,
but
what would they call a female bromance?
I don't know, but that's what it is.
Yeah, it is. We have to think of a name for it.
I know. Yeah, we will. Romance.
I know.
It's a romance.
Oh, it is.
Instead of romance.
Oh my God,
it's another one. It's a romance.
Anissa's actually done. She's
all
the
of
one
them.
The rawiers,
real authentic women. I came up with raw.
Raw talk.
Mm-hmm.
Rawism. She did all of them. Oh,
Ratitude.
My gosh.
Yeah, so now Ratitude. It's a romance.
It's
I
a romance.
I love it. We have a romance.
We do have a romance.
All right.
Gosh.
So now that we have been giggly and stupid just a little bit.
Which is completely normal for
it's
us.
It's completely normal. But tonight's podcast is definitely like... I have to stop and take a moment because I want to really, really hold space for our guest tonight because that is the only reason that she is here and the only reason that we are here with her is to literally give her the space so that she can tell her story. And if you happen to have kids in, well, you should never have your kids in the room when you're listening to the Raw podcast. I'm just going to throw that out there right now. It's not PG. But tonight there is going to be some sensitive subjects. And so you may not want to have it within earshot. I think that would be safe. But we're just super honored and really humbled, mm-hmm. to be able to share in part of her healing. And so... we'd love to introduce you to Marita.
I'm going to actually...
you're going to...
Yeah. I'm going to actually tell you all how I met Marita.
Mm.
And her name is Marita, but at the gym for months and months, I thought her name was Jeanette. And she never corrected me. And then one of the guys, like, she would come in and I was like, Jeanette, hey, how are you? And she was just so nice. And then one of the guys, Paul, in our class was like, you know, her name is not Jeanette, it's Marina. And I was like, just horrified.
Yeah, you were.
Because I should have known what her name is. Yeah. But she was so awesome. She never corrected me. And we actually we're sort of kindred spirits because we have similar background, our nationalities. And then we just became awesome friends. Mm-hmm. Like, she's one of my closest friends. And I love her dearly. I love her girls dearly. So that's how I met Jeanette. / Marita.
And you know, there's at least 10 people at the gym that we are still doing that with. So if you're listening right now and our dumb asses have had your name wrong for 6 months, you better come clean because we are trying to remember a lot of people's names and we're not all that
good at it.
Yeah. So please, if we're doing that, please set the records. Or you know what I would do? I would totally never tell you, but tell everybody that you were calling me by the wrong name.
Well, I think everybody knew I was doing it. Nobody said anything to me about it.
Yeah. All right. So back to the space. You want to say hello, Marita?
Hello. Yeah. And just for the record, I actually didn't know you called me Jeanette.
Oh.
No, I never actually heard that part, probably because it wasn't my name. So I wasn't paying attention to whoever Jeanette was.
That. You just thought I was talking to somebody. Well, that's good. Thank you. Thank you for that.
So, Marita, if you want to maybe start, I kind of want to start. And you let me know if that's not where you want to start, but I kind of want us to start maybe at the end, just so you could talk about why it is that you decided to be here to have this discussion. Let's start there if you feel comfortable with that.
Okay, sure. So the end, I guess, is now, right? We're talking about right now. And I guess most people who've gone through what I go through would call themselves a survivor.
Absolutely.
I'm not there. I will tell you very easily. I walk that very thin line between victim and survivor, and I will easily say I'm surviving right now, but I'm not there. So I am working towards becoming a survivor. It's not easy, and I'm learning that you can't do it alone. Mm-mm. You just can't. And honestly, trying to do it alone, it keeps you from pushing forward. You can't move forward. You can't move past or start living your life fully until you open yourself up. You know, I mean, part of staying a victim is isolating yourself. And I'm learning that very slowly. And I wish I would have learned it sooner, but better now than never, I guess.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I've just took, everyone thinks divorce is the answer and it'll fix everything. It doesn't. It really doesn't. It starts the beginning of probably the hardest part, to be honest with you. I mean, it was hard being in it, but I think the misconception is that a divorce is the answer.
Do you want to speak a little bit as to what the it is, being in it?
Yes. So I was in a very abusive relationship for pretty much my entire adult life. I met him when I was 19. We married when I was 22. And I don't even think I was barely 22 if I was. And it literally was my entire adulthood. Mm-hmm. So I've been divorced now for 7 years, almost 7 years. And I can tell you, I'm not free. I'm freer, but it's a process. So you have to forgive me because I have a really long, complicated story. So I don't really know where to start, where to stop. Mm-hmm. I could talk of it. So
you just talk and you feel that, like I said, we are honored to be here as part of your process between victim and survivor.
Exactly. Your journey.
We're just honored to hold space for you. So there is no right and there is no wrong answer. It is all about you.
Absolutely.
So
about you.
That scares me.
Well, That's part of the process, huh?
It Absolutely. Is part of the process. Mm-hmm. It's very scary. I don't, I'm quick to admit, I do not like attention on me. And that's part of, I think that's part of it also. You know, I walk around feeling like I have this letter of shame, you know, not just even on my chest. It's like literally on my forehead. It's bright and it's flashing and everyone sees it. Even if you don't know, you know, if you mm-hmm. don't know me, that's in my mind. That's what you see. Because that's just how I've been wired, you know. And
what's interesting about that is that I never in a million years, you know, over the years that I've known you, would, you know, you don't project that outwardly. You know, yeah. You are in class, you are a beast, you know, you are full of energy, you mm-hmm. are, you're completely committed coming in, taking classes, being part of the community. And so when I found out about it, and I know more about Marita's story than Anissa does. I've actually been, we've had conversations about it.
You've helped me.
Received mm-hmm. phone calls at various times of the night and the day. And so I only asked Marita to, I only felt compelled to ask Marita to come and speak about this, hoping that she would, because she actually spoke to a group a few months ago.
I did. I think that was the first step.
Ooh, tell us about that.
So I, and actually this all started with Ellen. Ellen, very just honestly said, I have a therapist. It helps me. And I'm not ashamed of it. I have one. And it helps to talk to somebody. And that was kind of the first step to where I took to healing. So mm-hmm. I had, my ex-husband takes me to court pretty much every year. There's not one year I don't have to hire an attorney or I have to mm-hmm. Fight. So, this last time was a killer. It was terrible for the throat. And, I just couldn't keep it in. And just by chance, you know, and I don't, you know, when I find an attorney, I always call the last attorney first, unless it was just absolutely a horrible experience. So I called him and he said, he got you mm-hmm. and I can't help you. Mm-hmm. And that was hard. So now who do you call? So I'm running through phone book. I'm looking on the internet. I'm like, I can't just go with somebody, just anybody, because I know what I'm going up against. And just to explain that is just an ordeal. And just by chance, I got not a family attorney. I got a criminal attorney just by chance. And he directed me towards Fulton County has a task force. Mm-hmm. Her name is Amanda. And he directed me towards her. And for once in my entire life, someone believed me without hesitation. They understood exactly what I was talking about. They didn't doubt anything I said, and they could hear the fear in my voice. And it wasn't just, I can't help you.
Right.
And she directed me towards, she got me connected to Partnership Against Domestic Violence, which is a domestic violence organization based out in Atlanta, and they're phenomenal. The work they do in Atlanta is amazing, and they help so many people. They're one of the organizations I feel like they just don't get a lot of reach. People don't mm-hmm. know about them, and I wish they knew because they're amazing.
Well, they're going to know now.
Yes, I hope so. Because I wish I knew them when I first moved to Atlanta. I wish I knew of them. I don't know if it would have helped me any because I didn't at that point didn't realize I was a victim. I got, they connected me with a counselor who I see every week. I saw her last night. We talked about this today just to make sure I was going to be okay.
And she's extremely proud of you, and she's going to be very, very proud of you.
She tells me every day, so mm-hmm. it's really nice to have that. But she, I actually, for PADV, they do a lot of things, but one of the things they do in October is called a candlelight vigil. Mm-hmm. And, they honor all the lives lost in that year. and it's many, and it's really scary just to even hear the ages, the names, the number of lives lost to domestic violence every year. And I was selected. They asked me. She thought I was ready. She asked me to be their survivor testimony last year. So last October, I stood in front of a room and I told close to 100 people my story.
And I was hoping that I could be there, and I had planned on going, and then work just got in the way, which is not an excuse.
Traffic. It was really a bad time. You know, everybody that was trying to get there, it was difficult. But it's okay though, because I knew you were there. You were thinking about me, and it's not that
you were
that,
so, you know, on my heart.
And honestly, like, I think it's easier to tell strangers my story than it is to tell friends. You know, like, I don't know why. Maybe it's because me seeing them is fleeting. And for you guys, I don't want you to look at me differently.
Absolutely
not.
I want to, before Marita goes on, I want to backtrack for just a second. I never, ever, ever, I guess I was just naive. I never, other than like in the movies or on TV, how Marita was treated by the court system. I can't even believe it. I can't even believe that it's actually real.
You know what's so crazy is that last night when I was thinking and just got home from therapy, what was on was the movie Enough with Jennifer Lopez.
Yes.
And I literally turned it on as soon as, right before she walked into the attorney's office. Mm-hmm. And she's like, my husband's trying to help me, kill me, and I need help. And he basically, I mean, in this scene, he gives her back her money and he says, he got you. I can't help you. And I'm like, oh my God, I live that. And you're right. People don't want to believe that kind of evil is out there. And to know of it is even scarier.
It's the thing that really, I mean, I've had conversations with Marita over it where I've just been so incredulous. I'm asking, well, this is ridiculous. You're, mm-hmm. you know, you're proving, you're giving them proof. You're doing what they're asking you to do. I cannot believe that this man has enough power or money or whatever it is to discredit you the way that it happened. And that nobody, not even the judge, believed you.
Yeah, and we should probably point that out, because I think my situation is a little bit different. First of all, it does happen often where it's hard to believe the woman, especially when she's been in it for a long time. That, you know, you hear that question, well, why didn't you leave? Why didn't you call the police? Why didn't you do this? There's a lot of...
And that shit just sucks.
It does.
Because... Mm-hmm. There is absolutely no way that when you are in a relationship, a marriage, or any type of partnership, right, that you have not opened yourself up to that person in wholeheartedness. And when that person inflicts violence on you, whether it's verbal, physical, there's no way for you to not own some of that
exactly.
as your own fault.
Right.
Right. So, and I'm just going to come clean. So I grew up in a household where this
exactly.
took place, and it wasn't all the time, but there were definitely incidences of it. And, everyone that's in the house with the abuser, everyone is taking on that shit.
Yes.
And owning it as
yes.
their own.
And the abuser is very good at making it seem like he's the victim.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, I'm wired to believe that everything's my fault. My therapist says I take on too much responsibility. And, like, I didn't know that was a bad thing, but it kind of is. You know, I own up to everything, so it makes it easier for everyone to say, oh, yeah, it's you. It's your fault. You did this. And that's not necessarily true. You know, I just know what he's capable of. And I know the battles that I cannot win. And going back to that, you know, like my ex-husband is former military, special military. You know, he was a police officer in both the towns we lived in. He is, he was a federal agent. He still is a federal agent. He uses, mm-hmm. and he uses those titles very well. You know, he was trained very well in psychological warfare. And it didn't dawn on me till a couple of years ago that that's exactly what he's been using on me for my entire adult. I mean, we're talking almost 20 years of marriage mm-hmm. and being together. You know, I was 19 when I met him, and I was 37 when I finally got the divorce, but I'm still having to deal with his bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just, you know, for me, yeah, it's crazy for that nobody would believe me, and everyone believed him, but again, look at what he had behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, they want to believe that he's honorable. You know, it's hard to believe that somebody in any of those positions would be dishonorable or evil in any way.
Or a liar.
Yes, exactly. Or... even though that's what he was trained to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, but, when I got with PADV, I learned I wasn't alone. You know, there are many women hiding in shelters who are married to police officers, and that's why they're hiding in shelters. You know, mm-hmm. and I fear for them because I feel like that just makes the journey even harder. You know?
Well, and I want to talk about that a little bit because one of the things that keeps coming up for me over and over again with having you here is that in that 20 years, so much of your life was a secret.
Oh, yeah.
And you having a voice, like I want to know a little bit about, if you feel like sharing, what cracked you open to allow the voice to come out versus staying in secret? Like, can you think of a pivotal time, or is there anything in particular that you can draw on that kind of brought that out in you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it was pivotal just to even have the courage to decide I'm leaving.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
How
did you decide that?
I don't know if you want to know this.
So only if you want to tell
it. And it's fine. Only if you want to share it with us.
Yeah, no. Only if you want to share it.
That wasn't the part I was issue. I was scared. I was worried about. So the last time I was, and I don't know if you can imagine, but I was literally on the floor and I had absolutely given up hope. I was done. He could do whatever. And I didn't think I was going to make it through that day. I couldn't get up off that floor. And I don't know where she came from, but before I knew it, my oldest daughter was standing over me, and she was prepared to take whatever else he was going to give me. And I felt shitty as a person, as a parent. I was like, there's no way I could let her do that. There's no way. And she was already subject to so much since she was born anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I thought if she could be this strong, I had to be that mm-hmm. strong for her and for the other. I have two girls for both. So that was a pivotal moment. That was that moment where I said, and I call it the no turning back.
Okay.
There's just no turning back.
Okay.
And, you know, she just... And she's always, you know, that's actually the second time I tell the story of her as my hero when she was born. She saved me. I grew up in a very neglected child, you know, and I think that's the reason why I was so drawn to my ex-husband. You know, I just needed someone to love me.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very good at faking that. And so... when she was born, she actually was the first person to ever just absolutely unconditionally love me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always say when she was born, she changed everything for me.
And she is, she's amazeballs. She's beautiful and independent and smart. She's both of the girls are amazing human beings.
People, yeah.
So thank you.
They really are.
They are, and they're incredible. So this man is my hero. The other is my healer. Mm-hmm. I always feel it. I am a firm believer that God puts people into your lives for very, very specific mm-hmm. reasons. And so for the years, I've known that those were the reasons why they were given to me. I don't know what I did. You know, I say that all the time. I have no idea what I did right to get them. But I'm really, really lucky to just have them.
So tell us about Marita today. Tell us about your strength. Tell us how you feel about yourself.
I don't feel strong. I'll say that.
And that's okay.
I mean, I'm a work in progress. Mm-hmm. I am, you know, doing everything I can to just become a better me, become mm-hmm. a real me, find out who I really am, not what my ex-husband made me believe who I was, not what my parents or my family made me believe who I was. I am right now just kind of on a journey trying to figure out who I am
mm-hmm.
and not just figuring it out, but being that person, not hiding it from mm-hmm. anybody. So I have a lot of conversations with my therapist about self-worth and value and how mm-hmm. self-worth is internal. It's what you think of yourself, and value is what others place on you mm-hmm. and how self-worth is much more valuable. And that's hard for me because I'm wired to think the absolute worst of myself. You know, I can see very clearly for other people, but I can speak towards it, and I feel like I can help. You know, I'm very glad that I have my daughter, that I can be there for her. I wish I could do that for myself, because I don't know how to do that.
Yeah. So now in therapy, then, do you have specific skills that you work on to get to that?
Yeah, she gives me lots of homework.
Do you want to share some of that in case some of our listeners mm-hmm. may have had similar experiences as you, and maybe that would be something that might spark something in them?
They're all ongoing. My very first assignment, which was 2 years ago, and I'm still not good at it, is in... I laugh because it's so simple, but my first compliment was to learn how to take a compliment,
mm-hmm.
not say anything, not divert or just accept it.
Mm-hmm. That's,
do nothing it's but say thank you. And I can't do that.
It's difficult hard. For a lot of people to do that.
Yeah. So just receive, mm-hmm. you know, because I'm taught to not really do that. I'm wired to receive all the negative. All the positive is foreign. Absolutely. I can push it out, but I cannot receive it. It's too foreign for me. It doesn't feel right at all. It's very uncomfortable. And I don't know. And I didn't realize that was weird or, you mm-hmm. know, like as a result, like, you know, I thought I was... It's interesting. I actually thought, well, I'm normal, you know, and I told you, I didn't think I was a victim. When I first got a divorce, I would have never thought I could call PADV or the task force in Fulton County and ask for help. I was trained to believe that this was all because of me. I'm mm-hmm. suffering because of what I did, you know, so... I didn't know all of that's entangled. So that was my first assignment, was okay. to accept a compliment. And flash forward to today, like yesterday. Yesterday's assignment was reframing my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, acknowledging the negative thought, but stopping it and being, okay, let's rewrite that.
So for instance, as soon as you said it, I went, I want to reframe that. You said, I'm still not good at that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How would you reframe that?
I'm working on it.
Oh, see? I'm working on accepting compliments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's hard too. Mm-hmm. You know, I
Pretty
mean,
difficult.
It is, you know, it's really hard
for all of us.
It's like, you know, it's like a bad habit. Like mm-hmm. we're talking about a lifelong bad habit,
yeah.
you know, so
under distress.
Yeah.
So it's different than other people's bad habits, right? I mean, you're in a situation where you're stripped of, I mean, I'm not going to speak for you. This is just what I'm thinking is you're stripped of any essence that you recognized, and you're replaced with stuff that is unrecognizable, but you own it.
Yeah, it's hard.
And then how are you, so you have to strip it away again to know who you are.
Yep. It makes me very vulnerable, and that is a very uncomfortable place. So, and I mean, I can't, I have, and honestly, like the gym, like my friends, I couldn't do any of this without them, you know, I mean, and just even the comment, like, you're so strong, or, you know, that's my safe space.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't realize that. Like if I brought my family to the gym, like the first comment they always make is, you are so different in that room. And they don't know it. So what you see in the gym, that's me being strong because it's my safe space.
Right.
It's me helping, like, it's my therapy. I always say that endorphins are the best drug.
For sure. Yeah,
so,
for sure.
But it's just my place where I can release. There's many reasons why, you know, I feel like I have to stay strong. You know, I'm always looking over my shoulder for that next fight. And you know, it's just where I can just release all of my energy. And it's my gift to myself. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole reason why I started. Like, I did it almost a year after I moved to Atlanta. I was working four part-time jobs. I had no job when I got divorced. I left with maybe $200 cash because that's the first thing he took away. And I was doing everything. I was trying really hard to maintain the girls' life so that it wasn't too different from what we had before. I was trying to make everybody happy. And the gym was the only thing I did for myself. So that 1 hour a day was the only thing I did for me. And so when I go in there, I mean, yeah, you get everything. You see everything from me because it's literally the only space I had that I could just focus on me. That was the best thing I did.
Girl, there's a fire in you.
There's a fire in her.
There's a fire in you that has been burning for a very long time. Someone who leaves with $200 and gets
two
four jobs
and leave,
and keeps things afloat, that does not happen easily.
No.
So,
and if
I
you
mean,
know,
own that, that's amazing.
If you know the girls too, the way that I know the girls, it's they're a product of their environment. So they are so strong. They're blooming, they're blossoming, you know? And I know that there's some things that deep seated things in there that will eventually have to be worked out as they get older, but they're thriving.
I'm very proud of that.
They're thriving.
And if you think about it, there are a lot of families where that's not the case because of the history, because of the environment. They grow to mimic bad behaviors and take on, and they are, so that's a huge testament to you and, you know, trying to move them away from that, you know, and to be a more positive influence in their lives.
That's a conversation we actually had with my therapist last night. Because for me, I didn't have that.
I was going to say, you didn't grow up in that environment.
I did not have that at all. And I was told her, I was like, I'm glad I'm that for my children. But damn, I wish I had that.
Oh, absolutely.
And I still wish I had that. It's not easy. And I feel bad almost saying it, but I don't think that's just a selfish thing. I think it's
not
something everybody needs, but you're right. I, I did not grow with a supportive, loving family. I did not. They were there for me at times, but I'll say this, my mother, I've maybe spoken to my mother maybe five times since I got divorced 7 years ago. She still blames me for everything. It's not even just what I did, but, oh, you let him, mm-hmm. you're letting him do, like, there's just no understanding, there from her. Mm-hmm. And, she just feels like I should have just stayed in it for the girls. And that's not the right answer.
No.
I'm not helping my girls by staying
with that.
Yeah.
It's a very old school view of things too.
Yeah.
So.
And you know, it's interesting to think about when you say that, you know, you wish you would have had that, but you give it to your girls. And you know, that's how I think that generationally bullshit leaves families mm-hmm. is because the generation that comes next, whether you have alcoholism, drug abuse, domestic violence, sexual abuse, any of those things within a family, every generation has a choice.
Exactly.
To do it absolutely. Differently.
And exactly. that's why I mentioned it.
And that's exactly what yep. I think was pivotal is that I made the choice to not be like that. I made the choice to make sure that my girls knew no matter what, they were loved by at least one person absolutely unconditionally.
And that's and where that was important comes in.
To me. It was yeah. important to me that they knew that even when they didn't believe in themselves, I believed in them and they could do it.
There's the strength that you didn't even know that you have, that you even today
and I can
you're
see
like,
it.
But I have
you
it
know?
For them.
Exactly.
And that's the thing is that I have that very easily mm-hmm. for my girls. I don't have it for myself. And
but
that's
I
why
think
I'm struggling.
That it's there. I think it's there. You've progressed so much since you left 7 years ago.
We're just getting to just speaking my story.
But you've got to now is let's retrain the brain and
right.
let's because I can tell you a handful of people that I know personally in my life over the years who gave up. They just gave up. They thought this is my life. This is how I, and their children are walking the same paths. And so you have to have something inside of you. And it's just amazing to come from your background and your history with your family and then go through all the things that you've gone through and come out of this tunnel with two strong, you know, thriving children. I mean, what's the odds for that to happen? Because patterns just repeat. Behavior just repeats, you know? And it's not that people are, sometimes they just don't know any better. Like literally they just don't know any better. Or sometimes they just don't care.
Or the environment is so bad or their circumstances and it's just, you can't crawl out of the hole.
Right. I can't even take credit for that, though, because honestly, it was, and again, it was God talking to me, not through you guys, through my friends, through, you know, everybody he put in place. I mean, it was just, I was learning to listen to the messages and finding them, and I just became more aware. You know, honestly, faith was what carried me through everything, and he brought me you guys. He brought, I don't think people believe in miracles until they really are like at the very bottom. And then all of a sudden something happens and you're like, okay, it couldn't be anybody else but him.
Right.
You mm-hmm. know?
Yes.
But, it was you, you know, it was very easily. I could have easily said, you know, this last time I go, okay, fine, this is it. I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to wash my hands and let him have what he wants. But it was you who said, love her. Just continue to love her. And I was like, that was pivotal because you're right. If I really do love her unconditionally, I will love her through this and she will see it.
Mm-hmm.
I will not become the person they all, the court, the mm-hmm. him, her, even at times when, you know, like I will not become that person. When she looks back she's going to see that all I did was love her mm-hmm. throughout all of this.
And you know
that. And she will.
And then I can, there were a few times with
and
mom.
She is. She is.
For sure.
She for sure is.
I don't know.
She is, Marie.
I can't see it yet, so.
I see.
I'm going to just have faith it's going to be there.
I see it, and I'm not even entrenched in it as much as you are, but I see it in the little bit of communication that I see. I see it.
I hope you're right.
I know, I'm sorry.
No. That connection is not going to be severed. I mean, the love that a mother has for her child is, when it's done right, is there's no breaking that bond. So even if there's distance or anger or pain or even someone who is wedging themselves mm-hmm. between it, none of those things is strong enough to break the bonds of a mother and her child.
And then there's going to come a point where the truth will come out. Because it always does. Comes out. It always comes out. Whether we want it to or not, it always comes out. And I always tell Marita, as difficult as it is right now, just work every day on doing whatever you need to do to be there when it happens. Because when it happens, she's going to come straight to you.
And until then, I'm going to work on myself.
And you work on yourself. And that's what we've had so many conversations about this. And, you know, when I was telling Marita about going to therapy, I really wasn't sure. She was in a very fragile moment in time in her life. And I wasn't really sure she would believe me truly. Or take the advice. There was a lot going on in her life at that moment, and she did it almost immediately. And
you have to learn to listen to the messages.
Really super proud of her. I don't ask her a lot about it because that's her journey. Mm-hmm. And you know, my tendency is to say, "Are you still going to therapy? Are you still going to therapy?"
Every week.
You know, and so, but I don't. But I know the answer because she gives me bits and pieces of information in our conversations. And I will tell you this. A year ago, the person that is sitting right in front of us was falling the fuck apart.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And the journey that she's made the person that I knew when I met at the gym, and I didn't know anything about her, and we got to be friends, and then I found out a little bit about it, and then something happened, and she was in a very fragile position. So to see, you know, to discover from when I met you to then finding out a little bit about what was going on, and then this breakdown that happened to now is
a miracle.
It's a miracle. It is. And it is friends and family, but it's you, like, even when you told me last October that you were going to go speak, I couldn't believe it. I honestly could not believe it. And I knew that the therapy sessions were working. They were doing their job. And, you know, it's very easy for people to say, "Oh yeah, I'll go to therapy." And then they go for one or two times and they're like, "This is such shit. I mean, like, what? I'm not doing anything. It's
right,
not helping me."
Yeah.
And to just give up. And it was very important to Marita to stay in it for herself. And she's right. It's funny, you know, you notice little nits and picks about people, you know, and she was so fragile and she was so, your self-confidence and you were so low that it was almost like she was so mousy, and it was so like just so like cowering in front of like a humongous elephant, you know? And so to see you not only blossom and bloom and thrive as you're doing, as you're working towards, but becoming part of the raw community. And, you know, she's very quiet in raw, but she'll participate when you ask her to, when you ask her to, but she's one of those quiet, you know, she doesn't always, she'll like a lot of things. She doesn't say a whole lot, but when you ask her to do whatever, she does it.
It's so funny because you're sitting here talking and all I can think about is the numerous tags I untag myself. Like,
I know. And you know what's so funny about that? I know that. Yeah. I know that about it.
I wondered if you knew if I just untag myself.
And, you know, Anissa's told you I dabble in photography. I'm an amateur photographer. I'm not by any means a professional, and I probably should go take some classes, but I love it so much. And I think the reason why I do so well is because I just have really good timing and I know my subjects. And I've taken a gazillion pictures of Marita.
And they're all like,
and there's never been one time where I've said, Marita's gotten up on stage and did a series, and I've taken her photo. She's been up in front of everybody. She's never said no. But she's untagged herself in so many of my photos. But I've posted.
It's hard for me to see myself strong. Like, again, like, it's just
Can we reframe that?
And
I know.
First Facebook and Instagram photo for my public pages when I was doing it was of her. Of her. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's uncomfortable. Like it's just everybody seeing me as strong.
I know.
Because again, in my mind, I think everyone sees me and is like, oh, there's a
incongruency.
Weak.
Yeah. Huh. So because of the incongruency, at some point, I would think that, like, if it's on a scale, right? So right now, the scale that's telling you that you're not strong, that's weighed a little heavier. So I imagine with your therapist working with you, you're trying to balance the scales.
Yes, I am a Libra.
Yep.
Balance.
Oh, holla. you knew there had to be something like that would poke out in our podcast.
Absolutely.
So balancing that out and then swinging the other way, maybe you need to quit untagging yourself, sister. I'm just saying.
I've tried. Mm-hmm. I even made one of my five photos. Mm-hmm. But
she never asked me. Like, she never said, hey, please don't take my photograph.
No, I don't.
Okay. She never has.
No, that's great. When you ask me to do anything, I don't say no.
No. Right. And she's always my go-to when I am trying to like take photos for promos and stuff. I want to backtrack for just a second because I think it's super important, especially for our roarers who are out there. This whole subject of going through domestic violence, just not domestic violence, but anything, and having children that are part of that. So, and you tell us, you don't have to answer this, you don't have to talk about it, but when you were going through all of that, all those years, and you have the girls there, and you're feeling like this is your fault, you know, this is happening to me because I deserve it. I did whatever. You probably didn't even do anything, but I deserve it. So how did the girls fit into that whole scenario? Because you're trying to be a parent. You're trying to raise your responsibility when you have a child is 100% on your children. And then to have to go through something that is so horrific and so physically and emotionally and mentally horrible and but get your kids dressed up for school and feed them lunch.
Yeah, how do you maintain normal in the horrific? Like, that's a great question. So tune in next week for this part two of
Keep Pushing Forward.
Of Keep Pushing Forward.
With Marita.
With Marita.